Hey, and welcome to the Perpetual Notion Machine this fine Thursday, September 10th of 2020. So tonight, I'm your host, Josh Mitchell, and joining me is Kelly Schwartz.
Yo.
And Eric Clark.
Hey.
So this week, we want to give you some local virus-related news, because it's COVID season, including the recent startup of a COVID-19 vaccine trial at UW-Madison and UW-Madison campus outbreaks. So, welcome everybody.
How's it going?
Good.
So, I guess maybe we should start out with like an explanation really quick of like what is a vaccine and like what a clinical trial, like what clinical trials look like in their phases. So, in case you missed it, a vaccine is usually some kind of material that's injected or sometimes given by like inhalation, but really it's just to introduce your immune system to something that will stimulate it, your immune system to make antibodies against whatever that infectious agent is. So where it's like a little piece of something to teach your immune system that that's a disease, like that's bad. We better take care of that the next time we see it.
So your immune system recognizes self from non-self, right?
Right.
And in doing so, you're producing a not-self analog or a copy of something. So in this case, it's a protein, right? So right. It's a protein that this virus produces that your body doesn't produce. So your body is able to learn, oh, not-self invader attack.
Right. And so like, one of the ways that we will develop this vaccine after like the research R&D kind of section in the lab is to move it into a clinical trial. And those are typically broken up into three different phases that you've probably heard about in the news. Phase one is like a small group of people that are injected or given this vaccine in some way. And that's usually just a small number of people to find the best dose with the least amount of side effects. And there's like some assessment of safety and effectiveness at that stage. Phase two is like a slightly bigger group of people. And that's usually is used to figure out like what the most common side effects are and to make sure that like the vaccine is actually producing that immune response that we talked about. And so phase three is like the final stage. It's a much, much larger group of volunteers. And that is helpful to assess whether or not a vaccine is like effective in real life. So like, do people who receive the vaccine do better or get sick compared to people who don't have the vaccine? Are they protected all the way or part of the way? And then with a much larger group of people, some of the potentially rarer side effects can become apparent. And Kelly, do you have something to say?
I do. I did want to point out, you've done a great job talking about the different phases of clinical trials and why they're important and sort of the stepwise kind of ramping up of the amount of people and the goals, achieving certain goals in doing so. There's a wonderful New York Times article called "These Scientists Are Giving Themselves DIY Coronaviruses" that I encourage everyone to read. It's wonderful writing. But it also sort of brings up this question of why do we need to do these trials? Why do we need to follow this process of regulation? And it is an interesting question. I think I'm curious to know if you guys were to go ahead and invent your own. So we pick an antigen. So in a lot of cases, people will use the spike protein, the receptor for SARS-CoV-2. So you can go ahead and make one and inject yourself. Would you guys do it?
I guess we're spoiling the episode a little bit. I did do it. I went and signed up and I got injected with one of the trial vaccines.
Not trials though. I'm saying like
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. Yes. That's all I wanted to clear. Josh,
you would inject yourself with your own homemade.
I mean, what kind
vaccine?
Of
I would too.
Am I? If I don't trust myself enough to make something that I would put in my own body.
you just want the Nobel Prize again, right? Because what was it? Was okay. Oh, you remember what was the Nobel Prize? What was it? Wasn't it for
It's for Helicobacter pylori and ulcers, but I don't remember the guy's name. That's really unfortunate.
I don't remember either, but man, I mean, if testing yourself gets you a Nobel Prize, I mean, maybe there's something to it.
Yeah, that's what I love about science, that like romantic history when people were injecting themselves with their own homebrews in order to prove to everybody else that didn't believe them.
Oh, man, see, you're asking me, do I trust my own handiwork? Oh, that's the tough question right there.
Good, Josh.
For the sake of being a scientist, yes. Yes, I would. Would I be nervous the whole way through? Undoubtedly so. I've seen my DNA gels that I run, and they leave a lot to want for. So
it's the thrill of discovery, Josh.
yeah, the thrill of discovery. All right, I don't want to turn myself multiple colors. But that being said, all right. So outside of injecting ourselves with our own coronavirus vaccines,
yes,
Ari, just recently, I heard you've been possibly participating in a trial. Is that true?
I have. It's one of two of the, I think, the biggest, at least publicized trials, which are the AstraZeneca trial, the one that I took part in, that is currently going on at UW-Madison. And then there's another company partnered with the NIH, the National Institute of Health, that the Moderna vaccine, and they're pretty radically different vaccines. AstraZeneca's vaccine is also sometimes called the Oxford vaccine because it came out of work done in the lab in Oxford. But it's a modified adenovirus, and an adenovirus is like a common cold virus. And it's not a human adenovirus, it's a chimpanzee adenovirus. So a cold virus that would normally infect chimpanzees that has been engineered to not replicate, so it can't make more of itself like a normal virus would. And it also makes at least part, or if not all, of the spike protein. And so when you are injected with it, theoretically, your body would see, your immune system would see spike and launch an immune response, make a bunch of antibodies, but that virus wouldn't actually make you sick, and the virus would not expand itself in your body. In contrast, the Moderna vaccine is actually really wicked cool. They're trying to just inject a piece of genetic material from a virus that would encode the part of the spike protein. And it's kind of founded on the central dogma of biology that DNA makes RNA makes protein. So they've decided to take advantage of that by giving the cells RNA and hoping that your cells would make the spike protein themselves. And that way there would be no virus at all. Ever being injected into you.
Yeah, this one's really interesting because it's very, I guess, non-traditional from what we've been used to, because the idea of using the proteins, the part of the virus, right? Because a lot of vaccines, right, have live, then you have, the attenuated, right? Things that are more damaged. But then there's also a lot of vaccines where it's just the protein. So to start that step before, right? Like instead of giving the instructions, hey, you can get cake out of this, is just a wild thought. So I'm going to be really interested to see how Moderna's goes.
Yeah, so, for sure.
So I have a quick question. SARS-CoV-2 itself is an RNA virus, right? What is the difference between the RNA virus and then just sort of in administering a piece of genetic material as a vaccine?
So I believe that it's just a matter of the mRNA that they're using in the vaccine trial only encodes a little bit of spike, not even the whole spike, whereas the viral genome of SARS-CoV-2 is a bit larger and encodes multiple proteins that make up the whole virus. So basically the vaccine RNA could not make a whole virus because it doesn't have all of the pieces parts.
You know, it could be that in the future, we don't call this the COVID vaccine, we might just call it spike. Like, hey, did you get spike? I got my spike this year. It's catchy, isn't it? I like that.
And it's very nice.
I know.
A good name.
So, Carrie, you want to catch us up on the news? What's going on with AstraZeneca locally? Because I thought there was some news on it.
Yeah. So shortly after they started the trial in the U.S. So Madison is one of the first locations in the U.S. that they've started sticking people. But they've already been injecting people in, I think, Brazil and also the U.K. So they have already administered, like, I think over 5,000 doses, at least the initial dose, because there's two, one on day one and one on day like 29 or 30. So like one and then one a month later. They found a potential adverse reaction to the vaccine in the UK very recently. So they've paused enrolling new people or giving people any more injections of the vaccine until they've determined whether or not that reaction was actually because of the virus and whether that's a super rare reaction or if it is actually poses a risk to other people in the study. So yeah, we're just kind of waiting to hear more about it.
Yeah, I think this brings up an interesting concern. I was listening to a podcast, The Daily, which I think is the, Kelly, do you listen to that one?
Not familiar.
I think it's so good. I want to make sure. New York Times, right? I want to say it's the New York Times one.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it. But what was really interesting is they had an episode that was talking about concerns of trust with the vaccine, which is, you know, as a scientist, that's not really something I think about all that often. And they were talking about some CDC officials who were testifying in front of Congress. And one of the interesting things that senators and representatives were asking the CDC is this vaccine going to be safe? And, you know, scientists, like I said, we're the kind of people that, you know, you touch your hand to the stove and go, ooh, that was hot. I wonder if it happens twice, right? We go right in for that second time. But to think about the rest of the public saying, is this, you know, do I even want to put my hand by the stove right now, is a really good question. And so it was really interesting to see that there was, you know, this discontinuous thought where the CDC is going, you know, all for it, let's get this done. And kind of the American public's like, you know, pump the brakes here. We're not entirely sure whether we even want to deal with this. And there was a recent survey. So this was May 2020. And I thought what was really interesting is that, I mean, you're right on the threshold of 50-50, right? 50% of adults that were polled. So given this is 1,000 people, 49% said, yes, I'll take it. 31% said, I'm not sure. And then 20% said, no, I'm not going to take it, right? I mean, what do you guys think about that?
So I work in GMP, which is letter soup to most people. It's good manufacturing process. And this is an aspect, this is the most boring aspect of science, I think, that most people would engage with. But it's, so what we do is we test pharmaceutical products to make sure that they're safe. So not only do we test to make sure they're safe, we focus on the process. We make sure that the process of creating these pharmaceuticals, vaccines included, that that's safe. So I can tell you, for example, if you're looking at an adenovirus vaccine, for example, one of the tests that we do is we take samples that are stored at some condition. We look over months time. Yeah, we do like a 3-month period, a 6-month, 36 month, so on, whatever the study calls for. And we do tests like replication competency to make sure that over time that this virus does not replicate. Right. So that's a big part of the control of this product. We make sure that there's no contaminants from the production process. We check potency. We do all these different things. So if you trust eating Oreos, those are subject to less inspection than these pharmaceutical products are. And I think that if people were a little bit more familiar with the really boring and very rigorous process of GMP, that they wouldn't. I don't think that they would be nearly as put off. It's all very routine. As scientists, we work in a workshop, right? We build stuff. And this is no different than safety inspections of any other kind. So I do encourage people to reach out and, you know, think about what kinds of tests they would want to see done on these products to feel safe. Because this is a discussion that we can have. It doesn't have to be an all or nothing kind of thing.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting too. Oh, Ari, sorry, I was cutting in. What do you got?
Oh, that's okay. I was just going to, Kelly brought up if you feel comfortable eating Oreos. I mean, if you take a vitamin or like any kind of dietary supplement, that's kind of the Wild West out there. And a lot of those companies probably aren't, and they certainly don't have to do any kind of rigorous testing like what a vaccine would go through.
Probiotics too. I mean, like how much rigor goes into kombucha? I love kombucha and I don't care what's in it. It's delicious, but you know, it's the same sort of thing. We don't necessarily expect this rigorous safety inspections for all aspects. It's all risk management to an extent.
Yeah, the probiotics actually. Oh man, that's another episode.
Don't
get me started. Just because it's really interesting. I'll 100% say that I love the idea of probiotics. But you're right; they're treated like a dietary supplement, right? There isn't. Well, I mean, that's the scary part about dietary supplements, right? There is not FDA regulation. So okay, I'm going in a different tangent.
Anywho.
Yeah.
Back on the horn.
Yeah, back. Okay, now we're back in. All right, back in COVID mode. So what I thought was really interesting too was that of the 20% that directly said no, the number one concern was what you had been talking about. 70% said they would be concerned about side effects from the vaccine, right? And right after that, 42%, right? So a pretty big difference between 70 and 42 was they'd be concerned about getting infected with the coronavirus from the vaccine, right? So your primary concern really is that safety. And I get the idea too, because COVID in the US has been around since, when serious shutdowns started happening is the best way to put it, right? We're talking end of February, March, typically, right? So I think what's terrifying for people is when you think about a vaccine, you think of maybe polio, you think of small, right? You think of our big time vaccine, and you think of how long it took for vaccines to be manufactured and developed. And it feels like takes years, decades to get this. And when suddenly you have scientists saying, oh yeah, we're going to have this in a year, I get the fear of why people would say, oh yeah, it's only been a year. But I think what that really illustrates is the unity of science at this point in time, right? Where you have the entire globe working on this. We're operating under safe manufacturing. We know what we need to do. We know how the vaccines work. But it is funny to see the inherent fear of, well, it's not fitting the standard time frame, right? I think that's what makes this so interesting, is that we expect it to take longer, and because it's not, we're scared, right? What do you think about that?
I mean, yeah, I agree. Like, it is, even as a scientist, it gives you some pause that, like, how many steps were skipped to, like, make it go this fast? But I also think that, like, some of those, like, steps that are skipped are like some bureaucratic blight, and also a byproduct of like one group or a few groups working on one problem instead of many, many groups working on the problem at the same time. But yeah, I can also understand why people are so concerned about safety. I mean, when I talked to my grandma about going to get this experimental vaccine, her chief concern was, what if they put something in your body that doesn't belong there? And I was kind of taken aback. Like, I was like, what? Like, what could they put in me?
Yes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, but I realized that, like, vaccines and, like, a lot of medicine is kind of a black box for most Americans. But you can absolutely open the box and ask somebody or read about what is inside. It doesn't have to be a mystery.
It's just boring. Like, so much of science, it's just boring. So we don't tell you. But we can if you want to pay attention, but you have to pay attention.
And we would love to tell you all about it.
Yeah, Kelly, your next show is going to be GMP, right? That's what it's going to be all about.
Gather around, children.
That'd be hilarious.
We're going to start with documentation SOPs.
Oh, that's terrifying. Well, yeah, I just think that's interesting, right? You get, and I think on top of that, right, you have all this rhetoric going around about, oh, vaccines and safety. If we got rid of all vaccines, if we got rid of, right, if we never eradicated smallpox, I mean, polio is almost eradicated. I think it's down to maybe 2 or 3 countries, which is just shocking, actually, which is really cool and also shocking. You know, if we didn't have vaccines, there'd be a lot more death than we would expect. It's just, you know, it's not COVID. So I think that's interesting. And then going along with it, right, we've also got the herd immunity. So that's why I think what's scary about these numbers, too, is that for herd immunity to really be effective, right, enough people being resistant or having it, you need 70%. And currently where we're at, we're way under that number. So for all of our listeners, make sure to get the vaccine. You're going to be safe. It's going through good manufacturing. you're going to be fine. So I highly suggest getting it. So I think it's time for us to, what do you think? Should we talk a little bit about what's going on here at UW?
For sure. I think that's probably really hot and pressing on everyone's minds. I know it is on mine as a grad student at UW, kind of not super in the middle of it, but you know, the biochemistry complex, pretty close to a big center in campus. So yeah, I guess.
Yeah, you want to take it?
For sure. Classes started last week on September 2nd. I believe it was a Wednesday, with 55% of classes being taught totally online and 45% of classes having at least some kind of in-person component, with Chancellor Blank's mission as, like, I'm paraphrasing from a town hall, that she wanted as many classes to be in person as possible. So we started with around 315 cases in the student population on that day, 9-2. A week later, yesterday, the count was 1,044. So that was an increase of an average of 100 cases per day. And that was following, they had already tested everyone that moved into the dorms. So it wasn't about new cases arriving from outside of Madison. This is pretty much spread from students who came here. And then today, according to the dashboard, which anyone can check out, UW Smart Restart dashboard every day, there was almost 400 student positives just today. 300 from campus testing and 100 from off-campus testing through the health department.
What percentage of students are being tested, would you estimate?
Percent of, like, the population?
Yeah.
I think that's hard for me to gauge because I don't totally understand how many undergrads there are. But, like, every student in the dorms has to be tested every other week.
So about, I'm getting the news report is about 17,000.
If I can just jump in, because we had to do this for a story today, about 17,000 tests have been completed. They don't say whether those are repeats or not. It's just total number of tests. Mm. We got the numbers from the university and I'm blanking, but it's above 40,000 in the upper 40,000s of total students on campus, including undergraduates, graduates, special students, postdoc, like all of that. Now, it's worth pointing out many of those folks maybe aren't on campus, maybe aren't in Madison because stuff can be online, especially as you go upper level. But if I can just have one more minute, Joe Parisi, the Dane County executive, pointed out in an open letter yesterday that those that the Dane County was seeing an increased reliance on the Alliant Energy Center because students claimed they couldn't get testing at UHS being booked up. Now, it's hard to verify those. We spoke with one or two students who said, yeah, I couldn't get testing for a week, so I went to Alliant, and that could come with financial implications for Dane County. So, yeah. But residents in dorms have to get testing every other week, and all the students in Celery and Witte have to, if they haven't been tested this week, have to get it by tomorrow.
And that's still not even nearly enough testing, like not even close to being safe.
Right. Thanks, Charlie.
Sure.
But yeah, so we've seen an explosion on campus. We've seen various groups of students ask for / demand that classes be moved online, whether that's like Associated Students of Madison or the Graduate Student Union. Public Health in Madison has said, if you work or live downtown, assume you were exposed and self-monitor. Chancellor Blank originally, I'm blanking on the date now, Monday 9/7, asked the undergrads to not move around so much, but still go to class. And she changed her mind last night, and now we're on online classes for 2 weeks, and a couple of the res halls are quarantined. And yeah, that's the state of things. I guess, Josh and Kelly, what are your thoughts as like a grad student and a Madison resident?
This is insane.
This is insane. invest in rapid testing. Like, you should be testing people more often. Like, it doesn't have to be this way. Like, there's just mismanagement at a profound level, starting at the very top right. of the federal government, filtering down to the CDC. I mean, it's insane. It's just crazy.
Well, I honestly, I do feel really bad for the university because, you know, state and federal funding are so poor. They didn't have much of a choice. They were in a bind. It was either you try and go to an online model as quickly as possible, knowing very well that you're going to lose a lot of students, or what you try and do is you just kind of pretend we can make it work, right? I can't imagine a single university official that realistically knew that Madison, you know, University of Wisconsin-Madison, often ranked as one of the like top five, if not number one party school, was magically going to be this socially calm, relaxed atmosphere where students weren't going to interact and be totally responsible. Like, I don't know what world that people were living in or whether this was truly they were in a bind, but it, you know, we all saw this coming. I don't think a single one of us pretended it was otherwise.
Yeah, I guess in my lab at least, operated under the impression that only really essential classes would be in person, and we were pretty supportive of a hybrid model in that situation. But when we found out that the attitude was as many classes in person as possible, and almost half of them were still in person, that was really unsettling and upsetting.
University of Michigan's grad student union is striking right now. GEO is. If anybody's interested in reading about that, I would be shocked if there aren't more following, because this is just not safe to put grad students into, especially master's students who don't have the autonomy that PhD students have. That are much more likely to lose funding and not really have a say in things.
Yeah, oh, yeah. My heart goes out to the grad students and adjuncts that didn't have a choice in the matter. Yeah. But I think we're going to talk about that kind of thing and strikes in a future episode, hopefully.
Stay tuned for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially once we have, you know, especially once we know what's happened after the fact, because right now we're in the midst of it, right? We're going to be really interested to see what goes on.
Right. Yeah. Well, I hate to end the show on such a bleak note, but hang in there, everybody.
Reach out to us on Facebook. Reach out to us on Twitter. If you have any questions, reach out to Shally. Tell her she's doing a great job. We appreciate all the work that people at Ward are doing. We hope to see everybody in the future in a happier, healthier time.
For sure. So yeah, thanks everybody for tuning in. Thanks Josh and Kelly for joining. And thanks forever and always to our fearless leader, Chally, working the board tonight. Follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Perpetual Notion Machine.